undoubtedly is one of the most popular events in Victoria. Never a problem selling out. And in fact, the bigger this event gets, I'm sure the happier people will be. Ian Huey from the Victoria Whiskey Festival is joining us in studio with a couple of very special guests. First and foremost, Ian, welcome. I'll let you do the introductions for the guests. But heading into the weekend at the Grand Pacific, you must be extremely happy.
Well, Murray, once again, we're surprised at the response that we're getting every year, and the demand for tickets just continues to grow. And at the same time, we're able to create a different and slightly newer environment every year. And we're going to serve 125 different whiskeys again this year. There'll be some repeats, so there's going to be some new ones, and there's going to be some gems that are going to be hidden out there. It's a total charity event, all the net proceeds to charity, and the most important thing is that everyone gets a ride home after the event, and that's a real crucial thing for us.
Yeah. The exciting thing about this event is people have fun, they're getting education, they're enhancing their appreciation.
Yeah, and then on top of that, if they get to taste products that they may not go out and buy an entire bottle, but they get there and they say that, well, this is good, and they come back and they may have another sample, a third sample, and the next thing you know, it creates this environment that, yeah, I do like that product, or I'm going to branch out and go elsewhere, maybe to bourbon, maybe to a new Canadian whiskey that I know is going to be presented this year, and maybe an Irish, or in the case of one of our guests here tonight, Indian whiskey. Now, we have Ashok Shablingham representing Amroot Distilleries out of Bangalore, India, and their product is going to be introduced to BC at the festival this weekend. And we did a tasting on Sunday night, and it was an amazing positive response for Ashok's company, Amroot, and we're excited that he's come. And also, I'm pleased once again to welcome Jim Murray in the Jim Murray's 2009 Bible, which is going to be available here in his listings of the 3,800 whiskeys. And Jim will tell you, but I'm just going to sneak one in here. This year, from the last time Jim was here till he arrived here, he has now tasted 1,227 new whiskeys in the last year.
Jim, I got to ask you, welcome to the studio, but how do you fit it all in? And people are saying, my God, how do I get that dream job?
Well, actually, some of those whiskeys were tasted here in Victoria. I completely rewrote the Canadian section. I tasted every single Canadian whiskey that we could find, and it was all done in my usual suite at the Empress, which has become like a second home to me. So Victoria has a kind of a now an embedded whiskey history, I think. And the thing is that this particular event for me is the only event I actually chisel in for an event I do every single year. I mean, I get invites to go to probably about 50 different places around the world, but this is the only one that I do every single year.
Now, why? Is it because their organizers here are not afraid to take a chance? They try and get new product in?
I think the organizers here actually do what it says on the tin. They organize. It's an incredibly well-run event. Also, because of the fact that BC is like various other places on the North American continent where liquor is controlled by the state, by the government, it means that people don't always see quite as many whiskies as you do elsewhere. And it gives people the opportunity to actually experiment and discover not just the whiskies, but about themselves, what it is about whiskies that they like. And Ian's absolutely spot on with what he said. I mean, the Whiskey Bible, yeah, 4,000 whiskies, but it's not just banging the gong about scotch. You know, I point people, especially in Canada, in the direction of Canadian whiskey, because people so easily overlook that their own indigenous spirit can be absolutely spectacular. It can be awful as well, because there are bad whiskies, but it can be spectacular, and an event like this gives people a chance to discover that. And then they can also discover bourbon, and something, I did a tasting last night elsewhere on the island, and I just blew people away by showing them Amroot whiskey from India, because their perception is that, oh, great single malt comes from Scotland. They don't think, oh, well, it could possibly come from India. But, you know, it doesn't even enter their thought processes till they find it.
That's funny you say that. The stigma of not being from Scotland.
Well, the Scotch whisky industry has a huge marketing muscle. the money that they put behind, you know, single malt whiskey collectively for, you know, through the industry is truly terrifying. It's like a tidal wave, you know, hitting the consciousness of whiskey drinkers all around the world. And to be honest with you, yeah, there are great single malt whiskies, but there's some dreadful stuff out there as well. And I think the trick is to get people to actually realize that their taste buds are capable of many, many different things, and they can find all kinds of whiskies that will win them over and win their hearts. It doesn't necessarily have to be from Scotland, and if it is from Scotland, it may not be the whiskey they tend to normally drink. You know, and when you go to a festival like the one we'll be having here for the next few days, it gives them the opportunity, without breaking you know, their bank account, to try different whiskies that they wouldn't normally have the chance.
So, Ashok, let's bring you in on this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're one of the new players to the scene. And as you hear Jim talk about the investment, you know, that the Scottish industry makes in advertising and marketing its product, you're obviously doing the very same thing.
Yeah.
You're letting the world know, hey, we're here. Amrut is here.
That's right. In my opinion, one of the key things, especially on the single malt whiskey market, is letting the people to taste. It's tasting is in believing. And especially when it comes to Amrut, and if you say on the first hand it's an Indian whiskey and let them to taste, 90% people got a kind of negative perception, oh, Indian whiskey, they weren't sure about it. And I think that might basically sort of influence their perception on the whiskey. Whereas if you give it to them as a blind whiskey without telling them what it was and where it comes from, 99% of the people haven't got any clue as to where it comes from. However, based on the profile of the whiskey in terms of nosing and tasting, 90% of the people thought it was coming from Speyside in Scotland, because the base character of the whiskey is very fruity and is very smooth indeed.
And as I found out, the entire process is very different in India versus?
Well, in terms of distillation, it's pretty much same as what has been done elsewhere in the world. Whereas, when it comes to the maturation, that's where the real trick is. An average temperature in Bangalore will be about 30 to 35 degrees Celsius, and it won't get very cold in winter, maybe about, looking at about 17 degrees is what the minimum temperature is.
So you're looking at very different sets of conditions in terms of the maturation process.
Yeah, completely different set of conditions. I would say, in a way, it's kind of similar to Kentucky. The amount of whiskey that we lose on the maturation is about an average 12% a year, whereas in Scotland it's a 2% a year is maximum. So
say something again? It isn't like Kentucky, because in Kentucky you can mature whiskies, you know, for 20 odd years. You cannot mature whiskey in India for more than four. I mean, the whiskey that we've got in front of us here is a 4-year-old whiskey. It looks and tastes like something that's in its 20s. And so it's absolutely unique for that. If you taste a 5-year-old Indian whiskey, then, well, if you wouldn't really be able to find it, but if you wanted to actually find out what that was like, I suggest you just buy some pencils, you boil them, and you drink the water, because that is what you've got. It's just wood.
And this is what I found shocking, is your room, the margin for error is very small, because you're looking at an accelerated maturation process.
I completely agree with you. In fact, one of the earliest bottlings that we have had, in Jim Murray's Bible, he has given only 87. And what he said is, exactly I would kind of phrase it like, the maturation time is so critical in India, forget about the month, a week will kind of make a difference between life and death. If this whiskey has been matured for another 1 month, put a cut in. That's what he has written on his Bible. It's so critical.
It is totally critical. And so on the good side for them, it means that they don't have stock, you know, sitting in a warehouse for many, many years. It means that you can push it through a lot quicker. But if anyone's listening to this and they've gone to India in the past and had holidays there or whatever, and they thought, well, hang on a minute, I've tasted Indian whiskey and, oh my, it was this sweet, ugh. Well, it probably was sweet, because about 99% of Indian whiskey isn't whiskey at all. It's actually rum. It's made from molasses or sugar. Now, this is actual single malt whiskey. It's made from barley. It's made from malted barley. And there is not that much around. There's a dozen or so single malt whiskies distilleries dotted around India. But even if you know, I've been to the distilleries in India that are actually up in the Himalayas, and they mature it in the Himalayas. They still can't get it to 5 years old. They still can't do it, even though it's cooler up there. It is hot, and it works. It proves that you don't have to buy a whiskey that says 20, 25, 30, whatever, and pay through the nose to get great whiskey. You taste this. It's 4 years old. This is as far as you can taste it. This is like having a Merc, putting your foot down, and you daren't let it rev any further because you will blow that engine.
We are going to do an on-air testing here after a quick break on Newsline PM. Jim or Ashok, you can lead us through this. We'll be back in just over 2 minutes. The Whiskey Fest here in Victoria is right around the corner, and we are going to try one of the emerging players on the scene from Amroot, Indian single malt whiskey. Ashok or Jim, who wants to lead this tasting? Because this is the hard part of the job, really.
Yeah, it is indeed, but I'll let Jim to do that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, while we were having a little break there, I was just showing you how to actually speed up the process of getting this whiskey ready. And what you do is, with the glass that we have here is a stemmed glass, and that's quite important. That means you can get your hands under it and your hand over the top, and you can warm it up. And rather than add water, just warming it up actually makes those molecules just come apart a bit. You excite those molecules, and various molecules that have been condensed are actually now springing forward and bursting through the gap that's been produced by you actually extending the molecular structure out of the actual whiskey. You are making the thing come alive. So by warming it, you're bringing far more out of the whiskey. Now, the one that we got here, now, we haven't got any spittoons, I've just noticed. That's interesting. Is 61.9% alcohol. This has come from the cask. So what you've got here is as nature intended. Now, if you're not used to tasting at this strength, this can be a little bit of a shock to the system. Now, you can probably tell I've got a little bit of a cold here. And I can't think of anything better for my particular condition than this. Because this blasts a hole into the sinuses. But it's not all about alcohol. It's not about the alcoholic kick. That's not what you're looking for. What you're looking for is that you're looking for how the whiskey is structured, the intensity of the flavors, and how they are delivered onto your palate. Now, really, we could do with a spittoon, but as we haven't got...
I don't even actually think they exist in this building, quite frankly.
Okay. Bucket? Anything? But
yeah,
coffee cup...
We have it.
There you go. That's what we need. I mean, especially for you, as I know you'll be working afterwards. Okay, so... So, what you want to do first is nose it. It's really important. For those who are listening, what Murray's just done is just stuck his nose deep into it, and therefore he's getting a big alcohol kick. Rather than doing that, keep the glass just below the nose and tilted and aimed at one nostril. So you're just using one nostril at a time. And that way it's much more delicate.
Agreed, much more subtle.
Because you're getting the air to mix in with the aromas. So you're splitting everything up and you can almost pick off what's going on. And secondly, just by using one nostril, you're not getting too much of an intense blast. And also, if you've got a little bit of a cold, it means that if you have got one nostril that's a little bit blocked, then the other one's got a much clearer sight of it. So that is... I mean, what are you getting on that?
In terms of flavors?
Well, aromas, yeah. Keep it under your nose.
It's a fruit. It's almost a
fruit.
A fruit that
is,
I can't name. I don't know if it's a citrus or...
It is citrus.
Is it? Okay.
To me, the main thing on this is a beautiful, gentle citrus note, which is not tart. There's a slight sweetness to it, isn't there? And I think that is so elegant. That's just beautiful, beautiful whiskey. And I know full well that if we had just dragged off the street, say, a Scottish distiller or a Scottish blender, and he knows this, he would never in a million years recognize this as being Indian. He would think that this is Scotch whiskey. There's no way that... I mean, I taste, 2,500 whiskies a year. If I did this blind... I would put this down as most likely to be a Scotch whiskey, if I was doing it blind.
Leave the tasting.
Okay. Well, when you taste, first of all, just take a little mouthful. And spit. Just spit it, because all you're doing with this one is that you're just getting your mouth acclimatized. Okay? Don't even think of the flavors. Alright? Now, the second one is going to be bigger. Alright? So you take a bigger mouthful, put your head back, move it around your mouth, open your mouth slightly to allow those big alcohols out, that way, so it goes out through your mouth, not through your nose, and then close your eyes while you're doing it, and then spit. Off you go. I'd spit if I was you by now. Now, your mouth is now coated. There's a slight oiliness all the way around, correct?
And a very warm tingle.
Very warm
almost
tingle.
Almost some electricity.
Yeah, but there's spices. It's not just alcohol, kid. There's spices, isn't it?
Because it's an Indian whiskey. It has spices.
I don't know. I can't know if it's a coriander or a nutmeg or something. Or
it's a kind of peppery bite. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is coming from the oak. What you're getting there is that it's sucked out all these tannins from the oak, and you're now getting these spices bursting around the palate. But what makes it work? In fact, are you finding that you're salivating slightly?
I am.
Yeah. That is what makes it work, because the fruitiness in there and the barley is making you salivate. You've got the spices coming through, but there's a residual sweetness as well.
There is.
And so what we're talking about is balance. Because if you just get tannins and nothing else, or if you just get barley and nothing, if you only get sugar, it doesn't work. It's off kilter, it's off balance. The reason why this scores around about 92, 93 in the Bible, this particular bottling here, is because it possesses balance. It doesn't have too much of one thing, and when it's starting to go in a certain direction, there's a counterbalance of something else. I mean, even now, I bet you that your palate is almost throbbing. It's kind of
it actually
pulsing.
Is on just below
there
the
cheeks.
Exactly right at your smile
yeah.
lines.
But the thing is, it's not just alcohol. You can taste this, and there's flavor and spice on the side of your tongue.
Exactly.
There you go. It's fantastic.
Ashok, how does this make you feel hearing this?
Now the thing is, the funny thing about or the good thing about this cask strength whiskey is, even though it's 61.9%. When you have an opportunity to drink it through, I mean, swallow the whiskey, you will find it's extremely smooth, number one. It doesn't bite your tongue. It doesn't have the sharpness, because that shows how the whiskey is matured. It's basically associated with the longer matured whiskeys. The longer it matured, the smoother it is. And again, at the 61.9%, it's extremely smooth. You can't basically find those many whiskeys.
I would say, though, that if people were going to buy a whiskey of you know, 62% alcohol, I would always say to them, spit. I mean, okay, swallow the occasional one, maybe. But for your health and for various other reasons, spit. Another reason is stay sober. If you stay sober, you can appreciate something.
Exactly.